So if you decide to keep this in the episode, for those of you at home, there are crows that live in the trees outside of our house. And for the past couple weeks, I've laid out a little plate for them that has just treats. I've been using cat treats, specifically cat food, because that's actually something that is not indecent for crows to eat. Mm-hmm. And a little bowl of water, with the hopes that eventually I will get anything in return. They have brought me nothing. There was a pine needle in the bowl once, but I think that fell from the tree. I don't think Croson actually knows that that's the end game here for me. I think I might have picked the meanest crow in the world. Because I go outside sometimes, he just yells at me as I'm feeding. So it's not like he's yelling because he's trying to communicate that he's hungry. He yell because he's actually the stepdad from Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. I think his name's Gabe. It's a terrible, awful name that starts with a G.
It's absolutely,
and it has four letters.
Just, you know, this is absolutely going to be the intro of the episode.
Oh, no!
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I do not know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today, we're getting into some of my favorite era of the show. This is a two-parter, Human Nature and the Family of Blood, Series 3, Episode 8 and 9.
Wow.
Yeah. These are two episodes that I feel like a lot of people... I don't want to say that it's like... The majority of Matuvians think this, but there's a decent chunk of them where this is their favorite story.
Okay.
I'm partly curious how you're going to feel about it, because it's very different from the rest of the show so far.
Okay.
In a way that is really engaging, and I think you're going to like it.
Different how?
That's a spoiler. Or it's a good setup for the Cassie Prefassy today.
Whoa, jumping right in. Okay.
So you know that the Doctor, when he is... pretending to be a human, goes by the name of John Smith.
Mm-hmm.
In this story, you get to meet John Smith.
Whoa.
How do you think that might be?
Part of me is wanting to ask, what do you mean? How do you meet John Smith? And the other part is like, obviously, John Smith is the name of a dog. Because based off of the thumbnail, which I don't think is cheating at this point, because thumbnails are very seldom informative. But in this particular thumbnail, it does have the Doctor wearing like a smoking jacket and...
looks like he just woke up.
Yeah, very clearly like disheveled.
Mm-hmm.
And Martha is in what I know is like... 20th century, like, housemaid attire.
Okay.
Like, very early 1900s, maybe even late 1800s.
Okay.
Am I wrong in saying John Smith is a dog?
Yeah, if that's what you want to go with. But like I said, David Tennant is playing John Smith, so I guess in that case, yes, you are wrong.
Okay. I don't get it. I don't understand your question, though.
The question itself is sort of meant to pose the mystery to you.
I don't like this question. New one. I don't get it. Like, this is ambiguous in a way that doesn't feel fair.
So let me recontextualize the question a little bit for you then. In this episode, the Doctor is John Smith.
Okay.
And so I will let you...
is this the inception of John Smith, or is this like...
So the name John Smith has been around since the classic series.
Yeah, it's Jane Doe.
Yeah, exactly. The Doctor takes it because it is such a boring name... but also so common that it's difficult to like pin down. You can't, like, you could put just John Smith down in a history book and we're like, that could be 1,000 people. So I will let you decide, in your opinion, is the Doctor in this episode John Smith due to an accident? Is it a choice he made, or was it forced upon him?
Okay. The angle of accident is fun. And I like the idea way more of the doctor making a whoopsie and having to quickly like compensate for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he became John Smith because of an accident.
Okay, because of an accident.
Yeah.
Okay, an accident he caused.
Yeah.
And the second part of the Cassie Profassi today is, as you predicted, this episode takes place in the early 1900s in a small English town. However, it is Doctor Who. There are aliens amok.
Mm-hmm.
And the aliens, in order to become a more imposing force
mm-hmm.
in this, you know, simple English town, schoolyard, farm. You get the idea of what I'm getting at.
Sure.
They create an army out of something around the farmyard.
Okay.
What do you think that might be?
Something?
Yeah.
Can I ask if it's inanimate objects or it's real?
It is inanimate, yes.
It is inanimate?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So, cows, out of the question. Sheep, definitely out of the question. This is going to sound really dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Are the big rolls of hay, is that just an American thing?
I don't think it's just an American thing.
Because hay is very common. I just feel like whenever you think farm...
Mm-hmm.
My immediate assumption is, oh, the U.S., because of how much fucking farmland there is here.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Especially there is a stamp you can get that has a red barn, blue sky, green grass, and a big fucking roll of hay.
I do like the image of, like, an Indiana Jones-style chase between the doctor and a giant roll of hay, bale of hay.
Can I say equipment?
Yeah, equipment.
It's a little vague. I understand that. But like what I mean is like shovel, rake, hose, strippers.
Whores.
Yeah. Sluts.
Ladies yeah. of the night.
Poles.
Ropes.
Chains. Whips.
Hookers.
Siphons. Scythes.
The song S&M by Rihanna.
Yeah.
All right, so
leather,
various farm equipment is what you're going for.
Leashes. There's a lot of farm equipment that you can use in in sex, isn't there?
I guess so.
Jeez, Louise.
I mean, there's that whole sort of classic image of people having sex in the hayloft of
barns. I mean, there's that whole song about my daddy's got a gun, you better run.
Yeah, because they're having sex in the hayloft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're getting way off topic here.
Equipment? Farm tools?
Yeah, farm tools is a fair point.
I'm trying to figure out how to phrase it so that way I can spin it if I'm kind of correct.
I mean it is, like I said, the early 1900s, so it's probably not a tractor, obviously. But
no, that's the thing, is I was like, I doubt it's like a John Deere.
John Smith versus John Deere.
Yeah.
In the Thunderdome.
John V. John.
I'm just excited to get to it at this point. So, the Cassie Profassi today is that the doctor is John Smith due to an accident of his own making. Of his own making isn't necessary. It's just an accident. And that the aliens of this episode have an army of farm tools to subdue the doctor with. We will find out together as we watch Human Nature and then come back for a little break before we watch The Family of Blood.
Mm-hmm.
On this episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who's my doctor? My crow son is outside.
This week's episode of Who's My Doctor is brought to you by me. Today is June 11th, one of my favorite days of the year, but I'm not telling why. You have to figure that out yourself. You think you know me, but you don't. Nobody knows me. I'm a secret. I'm an enigma. Except to Zach. He knows exactly the reason why. But nobody's allowed to ask him. Nobody can ask me either. You gotta problem solve. Figure it out. Bitch. Back to the episode.
Thank you. And we are back from human nature. So, you could see kind of what I mean now when I said this story is very different from other Doctor Who episodes.
Yes, I get it.
Yes.
I don't get it.
What is it you're not getting?
Zach, it's called a bitch. No, I fully understand. It does feel very period piece from this era, just because I looked it up and I was like, this is feeling very Pride and Prejudice, which actually came out in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marie Antoinette came out in 2006. Atonement came out in 2007. Because, like, there are still period films being made, but they just didn't feel the same way. And this definitely feels very much in that vein, which makes sense because it was most likely written in 2006 and, you know, in that
time. Released 2007. Yeah, it's especially really interesting letting David Tennant play such a different character. Like, he's clearly not playing the Doctor. John Smith is a very different person.
He's boring.
Yeah. I heard an interesting theory that, you know, John Smith has dreams of being the Doctor. And so the positive theory is that the Doctor has dreams of being John Smith. He dreams of being someone that could be boring.
Because it's all very mundane.
Yeah.
Like, everything that his life as John Smith is so humdrum.
He doesn't have to think in big pictures, as you can tell by the fact that he's fine with just being an ordinary school teacher.
His brain is not working a million miles a minute. He's not here and there. This is the version of the Doctor that doesn't have ADHD.
Well, and it's also just kind of unfortunate because, and I mean, I appreciate that they didn't shy away from it, that, you know, Martha is the first black companion, and they address it a couple of times.
They address it a couple of times. They don't. Everybody in the world addresses the fact that Martha is the only black woman they might have ever seen.
or if they have seen them, it was never like in a positive light, like the two Ponce boys who say, like,
tell me then, Jones, hands like those, how can you tell when something's clean?
What the fuck?
Like, those are the types of thoughts that, or like the types of things that, like, children that don't know any better,
or like edgy teens that are just like, they're specifically trying to be assholes.
Yeah, like that's the kind of stuff that I would expect to hear from the unintelligent. Yes.
Yeah, but then later on, when Martha is like trying to wake the Doctor up out of John Smith, John says, oh, she doesn't understand because of cultural differences.
Because
Martha,
of her culture.
This is made up. It's just like, you think she's an idiot. Like, you think she's a big, dumb dummy.
Well, because in this context, too, she's a maid. And typically, too, like, especially in the academic sense like this, if you're a teacher, you're smartest man alive. And I use the word man carefully, because not only are you intelligent enough and smart enough and clever enough to be a professor, but you're a man. Everybody in this so far that we've seen in any kind of position has been a matron or a nurse or a maid.
Yeah. And there's also very much like, you know, at this point in time, school is the prerogative of the rich.
Yes. And so even all of the people attending the school are snobbish boys a la Saltburn.
But then you've got the women or working class people. They are rich.
No. And
which also implies they didn't go to school. So there is an understandable like justification for the Doctor saying what he says. But it's still just like the way he treats her like she doesn't understand the difference between fiction and reality, because she's from Africa, his thinking.
It's like, it's the same train of thought that if you're talking to somebody who doesn't speak your same language, to talk longer and slower.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I appreciate and respect that it didn't. I feel like a lesser writer would have just had had John Smith be like the beacon of progressivism in 1913, like the shining example for them all. But no, they're like, no, John Smith is like totally okay with someone beating a child.
Permission to give Latimer a beating, sir.
Your class, Mr. Smith.
Permission granted.
Right. Because that's the society.
He tells them to do it.
Yeah, he's like, permission to hit Trevor. Or, no, what was
Tim.
Yeah, permission to hit Tim.
Psychic Tim, a.k.a. Game of Thrones bitch.
Yeah, permission to beat Tim. And he goes, permission granted. Like, because it's one of those, like, they didn't have to write that. They could have just not done that.
Yeah.
But they wanted to be like, John Smith is a very different person and not in better ways. He's just,
yeah, John
he is
Smith,
more human and therefore more flawed.
John Smith is not empathetic to anybody special. Because
yes.
I feel like that's kind of a cornerstone of the Doctor, is to pinpoint people that are freaking out because they're seeing aliens or ghosts or spirits, and to be very kind and gentle and understanding and wanting to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
John Smith is not that whatsoever. He is not particularly kind and gentle and understanding towards mm-hmm. anybody who is not part of the, like, hetero norm.
Yeah, I don't want to have this part in the middle go on too long, just because we have a whole other episode to watch.
No, but can I make a petition for myself?
Sure.
Scarecrow is technically a farm tool,
but it
is a tool to scare off crows. Do you expect a farmer, a very busy, hardworking individual, to be standing out in the field protecting their crops? No, they employ the service of a tool, a pole stuffed with fluff in the visage of a man.
It is funny
to
that you
ward off the crows from their crops, from their livelihood. You Zachary, know, please.
It's kind of funny. If you had stuck with straw, I might have given it to you because they are full of straw.
Zach,
but instead, your point's going to have to go to your Croson that
no,
showed up in the window.
Oh, please.
He showed up in the window.
Croson, no.
As if a last-minute alert to, like, no, it's not tools, it's a scarecrow. Hi.
Croson, you've never gone into that point on the fence before. Why did I not see it as a warning?
It was an omen, a crowman.
But please, come on. What other tool would you use to scare off crows?
Because
I specifically said farm tool. Oh, you think you're going to sit out there? You're a busy, hardworking individual. You've got fields to till. You have
you
so
many.
You
provided so many examples of what you meant by
identical,
farm tool.
Yeah, but I also have never thought of a scarecrow as a tool. But I really am starting to go, you know what? Yeah, because that is a very useful item to have if you're trying to protect your fields and farm.
So,
please.
I will say no points for this episode, but I will give you another treat that I think you'll enjoy, maybe
you
even more than the points.
Suck, man. I hate you sometimes.
So, as you saw,
you're as bad as John Smith. This is everybody.
This is racism
giving,
against Cassie.
This is you people giving you permission to beat me mentally.
So it. As you saw in this episode, the Doctor implanted his mind inside a fob watch and left a series of
instructions. Yeah, I kept making the joke about how he kept the Lord part and gave the time part to a watch, which is very appropriate. And I'm also very tickled at what other items he could have put himself into.
Well, so the reason I bring that up is because when he also left a series of instructions for Martha.
Yeah,
you know?
23 steps, actually.
But we only see a few of those, but Martha does fast forward through some of them.
One of them has to be that if he's really sleepy and will not wake up, to make him a pot of tea.
Would you like to see what he was saying?
Yes, actually.
Because there is actually a full cut of what he was saying. I will play it for you now.
It's working. Martha, before I change, here's a list of instructions for when I'm human. 1. Don't let me hurt anyone. We can't have that, but you know what humans are like. 2, don't worry about the TARDIS. I'll put it on emergency power so they can't detect it. Just let it hide away. 4, no. Wait a minute. 3, no getting involved in big historical events. 4, you. Don't let me abandon you. And 5, very important, 5, don't let me eat pears. I hate pears. John Smith is a character I made up, but I won't know that. I'll think I am him, and he might do something stupid like eat a pear. In 3 months, I don't want to wake up from being human and taste that. And six, now I have to talk for around about a minute without hesitation, deviation, or whatever the other thing is. It's like that panel game on Channel 4, like Rory just pointed out. However, I'm going to move on and say number seven and talk about my other favourite band, which is the House Martins. I don't know if anyone remembers the House Martins, but the best gig I ever went to was at the Scottish Exhibition and Conference Centre in about December. It must have been 1990, and the House Martins were playing. And it was quite simply the best gig I've ever been to. They split up quite soon afterwards. I don't know what that tells you about that particular event. I'm sitting in the TARDIS now, and I'm going to wind up soon, but not before I make a few strange noises with my mouth that will go somewhere along the lines of bingle bongle, dingle dangle, yickety doo, yickety da, ping pong, lippy tappy too ta. And 23, if anything goes wrong, if they find us, Martha, then you know what to do.
Wonderful. I've been racking my brain trying to figure out where that fucking sound came from.
Where bingle bongle, dingle dangle, yickety doo, yickety da, ping pong, lippy tappy too ta?
Yes. And I was like, I know that that's David Tennant, but I don't care enough to research. And that's just, that's gobbledygook. That's nonsense. The internet will never know what I'm talking about.
Now you know.
That's, now I know. Revelation.
That's rule number 8 through 22 is yickety-doo, yickety-da.
I really wanted him to drop out of, I mean, I understand why he didn't, but I thought that'd be kind of fun if for a couple seconds he was speaking in his regular Scottish
he was brogue. He was just regaling a story of him seeing a concert in Scotland.
That, and also it was making me laugh, him really having to like fixate on the word pears.
I hate pears.
Well, because in a British accent, it's pears, but also if you're really trying to stick with the British accent, it's Pez, which is Pez to me, which is the candy that was made in a, I believe it was the 30s. And the reason why Pez's are shaped that way and they come in a little like dispenser is because it was supposed to help people break their smoking habits. Mm-hmm. So they were mint originally, but in the like, here we'll help people quit this habit, instead of wanting a smoke, you'll then reach for this little candy, and it stands for something, or it's a much longer word that was just boiled down to its first, middle, and last letter, hence Pez. I don't remember what that word is exactly. I have an approximate knowledge of most things, this being one of them, and the history of Pez. But because it was such a nifty little idea and, in fact, very addictive, mm-hmm. because it's a fun thing to reach into your pocket, grab a thing, and put it in your mouth, and yum, 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 little yummy, yummy snack. And now there are all sorts of fun fruit flavors, some sour, some not, in a menagerie of shapes and colors and sizes even. You can get giant Pez that dispense the Pez roll candies themselves. What was I talking about?
Pears. How much Pez. The doctor hates pears.
Pez. Oh, yeah, I was told, I was correct. So Pez is the like shortened version of the Austrian word or the German word for peppermint, which is Pfefferminz.
Oh, that I do seem to remember knowing that at one point. I forgot it until you said mm-hmm. it just now.
Yeah, they started off as peppermint hard candies, and then when manufacturing processes changed and you could manufacture several more of the hard pressed powder candies. Anyways.
Well, let's do the Cassie Profassi for our second episode here. See if we can get you some points for
this.
So
I don't get any point at all for Farm Tools.
Not for Farm Tools, and it was not an accident. It was entirely on purpose.
That's really stupid. Can I at least have a separate count for Croson?
Sure. Croson gets 1 point.
That sucks, though, because he's never going to get any other point ever again.
You're going to walk outside the little like food dish you have for him. There's going to be like something. He's going to like drop something in the bowl, and you're going to be like, that's my point. So let's get into the Cassie Profassi for the second episode here. I'm going to do one that's going to be like a little like fun narrative experiment for you, I think, and one that I think is just going to be more straightforward. So as you can probably guess from the fact that the show keeps going, John Smith does eventually turn back into the Doctor.
Spoilies!
Do you think John Smith will want to turn back into the Doctor?
Hmm. I'm eating a grape. That was a bad time for me to eat a grape. I thought I had more time. Will he want to? Can I ask for a refresher on how he felt about the dreams he was having? Do you remember?
He was dreaming. He did seem to have these sort of wistful, like, I'm a great adventurer that goes out into space and does all these fantastic things and meets monsters and saves the day. Like, he kept it as a journal.
A journal with some very cool illustrations.
Yes.
Whoever is responsible for that, job well done.
Yeah, you didn't even mind when the Slovene showed up.
I wasn't paying attention. I was really hung up on the illustration of the Dalek and went, tattoo? And I went, no, that's ridiculous. For now.
Because later on when
ask me again in like a year.
later when he sketches Nurse Redfern, she looks in the book and is like, shouldn't I look more like that? And she points to the Slitheen on the other end of the page.
Oh, I didn't even clock that they were Slitheen. Yeah, that's how much I didn't care. I actually laughed at that joke.
Yeah.
Ha ha! Does John Smith want to become the Doctor? I mean, wouldn't you?
I mean, I certainly would.
Like, it's
love
that
to find out I'm secretly a cool spaceman instead of a dork sitting here on a couch recording a podcast.
This was your idea, Zachary.
But I didn't have the option of being the Doctor. This was the closest I can get.
Is being another white guy with a beard and a podcast?
Yes, as is my birthright.
You have no rights. You're a middle-class working American. You have no rights. Because there is a part of me that thinks about how you have celebrities in particular that when they get their fame when they're very young, and then think very wistfully of how nice would it have been for me to be able to go to the store without being recognized?
Mm-hmm.
How nice would it have been to be able to go to popular places like Disneyland and not have to have a special security fleet around me, but because I am somebody, I need those things. Wouldn't it be nice if I could just not have that sort of celebrity for a while? So I do think that there is a part of the Doctor that longed to be just a normal human man.
So does John Smith wish to become
the Doctor? Well, that's the part that I'm getting to, is that if there is a part of the Doctor that wished to be a normal human being with a beginning, middle, and end, as he, a Time Lord, does not have a beginning, middle, and end. He has do-overs in the form of reformation?
Regeneration.
Regeneration. Same diff.
Yeah, pretty close.
Now, be that as it may, that's the Doctor thinking about being a human. I don't know how human John Smith would feel about being the Doctor. Because if he does unleash all of these memories of his past lives, I don't know. That's a good question. I think, yes, I think John Smith does want to
be. Okay, so you think John Smith will want to become the Doctor again?
Yes.
Okay, well, that is Cassie for Fasting number one. And then for the second part, I'm going to give you different scenarios to come up with in your mind. So I can't remember if they've spelled it out specifically or not, but I don't, this isn't enough of a spoiler for me not to worry about it. The Family of Blood is chasing the Doctor because, as they say in this episode, they cannot keep a form for very long because the Family of Blood is a species that dies very quickly. So they are hunting the Doctor to basically steal their ability to regenerate and live forever.
Huh.
That is why they are hunting the Doctor specifically. So the Doctor, at the end of this, grants all of their wishes to live forever in different ways, each one a different way. So there are four members of family. There's father of mine, mother of mine, son of mine, and daughter of mine. Each one of them has a different one. You don't have to specify who gets what.
Okay.
But come up with four different versions of how the Doctor might let them live forever. And if one of them is right, you will get a point.
How to live forever. Well, it also falls into the how does one live forever. And that would be like being a published author, being a book, being an artist in a painting.
The Doctor presses the Family of Blood into pages.
Well, that's kind of what I'm thinking, is it's like, all right, cool. Maybe he's able to turn them into something, being a scarecrow.
Okay, being a scarecrow.
Forever.
Being a scaring crows for the rest of your life.
Scaring crows. You gotta scare them crows at the source. Go in the trees. Being a balloon. Balloons are finite. Those bitches don't last a day. So not a balloon. Becoming an oil baron. Because that was a joke I made.
He just turns father of mine into oil.
Oh my god, what? Okay, I'm hung up on the book thing. So I think one of them is a book, writes a book.
Okay.
Becomes a book.
Okay.
That's silly. I don't think that that's the case at all, but I don't know what else. I'm just going to write down a book. A book slash an art. Becoming a watch.
Okay.
Dissolves into the earth, becomes one with Mother Nature.
Okay.
Decay. That's a way to live forever. Kind of.
Underground is probably what you're going for there.
I suppose. Like, quite, like, legitimately decay.
Okay.
Like, I know we'll say underground. I know that's wrong, but I'm going to say underground slash decay.
Alrighty.
Because I know that that is death, but also in death brings on new life. And so, you know, circle of life.
Alright, so.
The antelope eats the grass, the lions eat the antelope, the lion dies, becomes the grass, antelope eats the grass, and thus right. The circle continues.
Well. So the casting for Fasty today is that John Smith will want to return to being the doctor.
That's wrong. I already know it.
And the family of blood, father of mine, mother of mine, son of mine, and sister of mine.
Daughter of mine.
It is sister of mine. I looked it up. I was wrong the first time.
No, because she calls her daughter of mine. Jenny does.
Well,
she refers to the child as daughter of mine.
She goes by both then. Her name is, she goes by both daughter of mine and sister of mine.
Okay.
But there are various ways of. Hubris, I suppose, is one of them becomes a scarecrow, one becomes some kind of artwork, one becomes a watch, and one it goes underground. We will find out together what happens to the family of blood as we watch The Family of Blood.
This is a stupid game. I hate it.
And we are back from The Family of Blood.
Way less blood than I thought.
Yeah, it's just their name. Father of mine blood, mother of mine blood, son of mine blood, daughter of mine blood.
Mr. and Mrs. Blood. Child blood.
The bloody family.
Son of mine's a little grimace. A choice.
Well, I guess we start off with just saying you did get a point in this Cassie Profassi. One of them did become a scarecrow.
Yeah, good.
And another one was left underground. He wasn't, like, buried in the dirt, but he was left, like, basically underground, covered in chains to just be there forever, unable to move.
Yeah.
And while it wasn't necessarily a piece of art, one of them was stuck in a mirror.
Mm-hmm. I count that.
Yeah, so...
I will tell you, too, the immediate thing I was thinking when I said stuck in a piece of art is, did you ever watch the Witches movie?
Mm-hmm.
With the
painting?
My favorite one, yeah. One of my favorite movies. Oops, one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really what I was thinking is... I specifically thought about, like, oh, she looks like the little girl that gets stuck in the painting that doesn't move but is always in a different position every day until one day she's not there because she dies.
Yeah. And I do leave a little creepy factor of, like, if you ever see something move in the mirror for just a second, that's her.
Yeah, she's not stuck in a mirror. She is stuck in all the mirrors.
Which... sort of makes you wonder if anything else pops up in a mirror, do they just, like, hang out?
I think so. Hey, there's a lot of superstition that is attached to mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that little girl's hanging out with demons and ghosts.
This story, especially compared to just, like, the last couple of seasons, is really dark.
Compared to the last episode, because that one was that was Burn With Me.
Yeah.
Which, like, also still a little dark, but familiar, because we have seen them floating through space on a unknown satellite or, you know, spaceship.
Yeah, well, there's an inherent level of, like, silliness to You know, the son has possessed someone.
It's
oh,
a
no.
murder mystery.
Yeah.
Where does everybody keep going?
Or like earlier this season, everyone's stuck in traffic forever. And yeah. there's crabs at the bottom of the highway. This time it's like, no, the doctor tortures four people forever.
That, and also the doctor puts himself into a watch, and his human version is so unhappy at the prospect of becoming the doctor again, because he is described to be, quote, fire and ice and rage.
Yeah.
And wonderful.
Fire and ice and rage, and someone, but also someone that never even considered that they could fall in love with somebody. Like, that part particularly upset John, where he's like, what kind of man is that?
Yeah, which also, to be fair, John, very incredibly boring. But I guess being mundane when you are the encapsulation of everything, basically.
Yeah.
Mundane and just being absolutely normal is something to aspire to. I mean, that's even something that I think like is a very relatable concept, as well as just fucking stability.
Yeah.
Like, that is so desirable, to just know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, to be able to see the events of your life span out, because you are in complete control of everything that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to who you are married to, your children, not necessarily when or how you die. That's kind of left up to a higher being to decide. But irrespective of that, having that life play out before you and seeing it and wanting it so desperately, but knowing that that is unattainable.
Yeah, it's this idyllic
mundane
situation for
mundane, ordinary
him, yeah.
life is unattainable to you when you are the doctor.
Mm-hmm. And especially because the life he gets is very idyllic. Like, he gets his two kids, and he gets his grandkids, and he gets to grow old with the same woman who's there when he dies. And he gets to die peacefully as he goes
in his bed.
Like, it's a very, like, not only do you get to live a life, you would get to live, like, the ideal life for a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're, like, you're not so important that, like, the world hinges on you, but you're just important enough that you're like,
impactful. You are not doing just an office job where you're sitting behind a desk and talking to a computer. You are a teacher, so you influence and impact so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your own family that is your legacy.
And you conveniently miss all the wars. You're a little too old to go to war when it hits again. You were too young when it was the last time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, what a perfect boomer-style life he gets. Yeah, I think you could probably see why a lot of people really, really embrace
this. Why
this
resonates with them.
Yeah.
Well, because also the casting in this episode is very good.
Yeah, which is very funny to me, because Nurse Redfern, I know her from another show called Spaced.
Uh-huh.
Which is, that was what Edgar Wright did before he did Shaun of the Dead. And that show is so specifically a comedy. In fact, she has a cameo in Shaun of the Dead. You remember that scene where, like, Shaun and his friends are walking one way and they meet, like, a group of other friends who are basically, like, replicas of Shaun?
Mm-hmm.
She was the opposite of Shaun. She was basically the female leading the group of competent people the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
That was her in that scene.
Okay.
So for me, she's a comedic actress, because Spaced is also very much a comedy show, and it's, but then you see this and you're like, oh, she's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's an episode that really, really lets Davey Tenney really stretch his acting muscles.
Yeah.
In so many directions too. Like, the doctor is played very dark in this episode, but John Smith is very, like, sad, and he's got his own, like, problems that we talked about last time, where he's not really a good person. Like, he's fine. He's a product of his time.
I hate to say he's pitiful, but there is a part where it's like, you do feel sorry for him.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he is so small.
Well, especially because when you think about the idea that Martha mentions that part of what they were trying to do is just outlive the family of blood, because the family of blood only lived like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
John Smith got less than that.
Yeah.
John Smith got like a month and a half.
Yeah.
No, 2 months, sorry, because Martha says that they only had a month left. John Smith got to live for 2 months. And Martha even refers to it as, like, they live like...
Mayflies.
They live like mayflies. John Smith gets to live less of a life than mayflies do.
Mm-hmm.
The nurse also says it where it's like, you got to choose to be John Smith. John Smith only got to choose to die.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about these ideas of, you know, when does a robot become a person? Well, it's the same sort of idea here. Like, when does this two-month-old character that the TARDIS made up, when does it cross the threshold of being, like, a person?
Autonomous.
Was it immediate? Because it feels like it might have been immediate.
Well, I also wonder, too, if you do posit that the Doctor dreams of normality in the same way that John Smith dreams of being the Doctor, that this is stuff that the TARDIS already knew.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a life that the TARDIS went, okay, cool. I can figure something out.
And you also really get the idea that because the TARDIS wrote it, the Doctor didn't get to put any of the little, like, isms of being alive.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when...
Like, it almost seems that, like, on paper, this might be... John Smith might be the most normal person.
Yeah.
Not neuroatypical, like, in very good health. Particularly if he's in very good health, able to have a, not large, but 2 children, healthy family.
Yeah.
At least from the one clip we saw, and live out to be well into his 80s.
Yeah.
Like, there is no part of John Smith that made me go, wow, quirky and interesting.
He was a person.
Yeah.
And he was an ordinary human.
The TARDIS's idea of what the overall human experience is without any of the other wacky, weird little nuances we like to call mental disorders.
Well, Nurse Redfern even starts asking him, like, tell me about where you grew up. Tell me about, like, your house, and all he can name are, like, real specifics.
Streets and cities. Where's the little, like, den that you would hide in as a kid?
Like, yeah, what are the little secret places that only kids would know about? And John Smith just sort of blinks at her. Because his entire frame of reference for, like, what he did is just, like, encyclopedic bullet points.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something very much like, that makes sort of an interesting point that, like, part of what makes people alive are the things that you can't just write down.
Mm.
Like the stuff that's so personal that to try and describe it is things that are so personal, it's basically impossible to share.
Well, because it's something that I've been rolling around and thinking about a lot recently, actually. What makes a person?
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little bit of an exercise where I was thinking about all of the qualities, I was thinking about all of the qualities specifically for, like, what are the little things that make me think of so-and-so?
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, I was thinking about what are all the little things that make me think of my mom?
Mm-hmm.
And some of it was physical attributes, like whenever I see a woman with teased blonde hair,
mm-hmm.
out of the corner of my eye, if I'm walking around at the store and I see that particular hair with my mom's, my mom has a little bit of, like, an Amazon build. She's very tall and very, like, strong. So when I see somebody that checks off those boxes of being a taller, broader blonde woman, I look over and I'm like, oh, that's not my mom. She's miles away in a very far away state. But some of the other little things, like the particular smell of the hairspray she uses, and the way that if you posit her a question and she doesn't quite know the answer to it and she doesn't want to think about it too much, but she's doubtful of whatever it is you're saying, she goes, you know, certain attributes, particular smells that, you know, is not like, oh, she loves roses.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I smell roses, like, yeah, but, you know, it's not the parts, it's the whole.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that my mom smells of roses and White Rain hairspray, that she's tall and strong and has bushy blonde hair, and that if you offer her a bag of black licorice, not only will she swipe it from you faster than you can blink, but then will eat it in one sitting. This woman can eat an entire bag of candy like it's her job.
She's like, you! It's like a dog with a treat. That's all for her. And she knows that nobody's going to want to share with her, so she can all of the black licorice. And so it's little things like that that I think make us human.
Yeah.
And so that's the parts, though, that the TARDIS...
can't write.
No. Yeah. It's kind of like how robots can't emulate being human.
Mm-hmm.
You can emulate factual knowledge. A robot could know what my mother's maiden name is and the street that I grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
A robot can't tell what a crosswalk looks like or the back of a bus. It doesn't know that.
That's why we have to tell it to log into our websites.
Mm-hmm. But it's little things like, and I think those can be lovingly called quirks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not attributes, they're not qualities necessarily. They are indeed quirks.
Yeah. So it sounds like you probably really liked this episode as well.
I liked it enough.
Okay.
I don't think I'm sitting here going, wow, my favorite episode. There are a lot of things that I do really like about it. And I do apologize for not knowing anybody's actual name. So I'll just use the terms that I've come up with. I liked Lord Voldemort. I think he was really cool.
Oh, Tom Riddle. Son of mine.
Yeah, thank you. I like Tom Riddle quite a bit.
Oh, the little Tim.
I like Tim. I like Psychic Tim as well.
Yeah, Psychic Tim.
Yeah, I did think it was a little silly that he was psychic. That did feel a little like Deus Ex Machina.
There was a little just like, this is just in the story. And even the doctor that just has like, oh yeah, you were born with it. Maybe it was Maybelline.
Well, because from the impression, it seemed like he was able to pick up like... what the watch was saying, what the doctor was saying from within the watch because of low-grade, like, psychic telekinesis or something like
that. Yeah, low-grade psychic field, I think is what he said. Or low-grade telekinetic field that you've had since you were born. It was something like that. I'll put the clip in here.
Insert here.
Oh, low-level telepathic fields you were born with. Just an extra synaptic engram causing... Is that how he talks?
But whenever there are characters like that, like, I know that there are... people like that in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you always hear stories about people that had strange prophetic dreams of what... There's a story of a mom who asked her, or like was checking in with her daughter because she woke up in the dead of night having had this horrible, terrible dream, and daughter responded with, oh, nothing, just out at a bar with friends, we're getting drinks, and the mom was like, you need to leave now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was exactly where you were in my dream, and all I saw was blood, and all I heard was screaming, you need to get the fuck out now.
Oh, jeez.
Like, this is non-negotiable, please, for me, get out. And so the daughter goes home, and then next morning reads in the paper that the bar that she was at later on had a shooting and 8 people had died.
Oof.
So, you know, weird, like, I would call that prophetic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is not something that is normal. And I've also come to a new circle where I think, like, that could just be another timeline that's overlapping in this moment. And you and your other alternate version are sharing a moment. And it's not so much like, oh, it's guardian angel. It's a, like, cool, there's, like, a weird, like, timeline rip where you... and your other self in mm-hmm. another place, in another timeline, are sharing a moment, and it's scary. And anyways, but I acknowledge that people like that do exist.
Mm-hmm.
It always feels weird to me, though, whenever they're portrayed in media, and it's not just a quality they might have.
Mm-hmm.
It is usually something that is used as a vehicle for preventing certain plot points because, mm-hmm. oh, I've already seen that happen, you know?
Yeah, I think it's mostly just weird because it doesn't really add up to much in the story. Like, the most of it is that it just lets you know that the doctor can save someone at the end of it. Like, because they have the psychic premonition that they're going to die in the war, and the doctor gives them a watch that helps them know when to avoid the bomb. Which, it's not... bad, it's just a little like,
it's one of those things where it's I like the inclusion of I like the inclusion of special children. You know,
it, that the world's just a little weirder than we think of it.
Yeah, and I like, you know, I like portraying kids as being different, because I was one of those different kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like when there was the episode with the little girl that was drawing all the pictures of the people in her neighborhood and trapping them in the art.
Oh, fear her?
But, you know, I liked having that, because it's like, yeah, I can give you the names and addresses of four adults now who were those children. And same with this Tim. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, like my nephew was kind of like that for a very long time.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to see and nice to include kids like that, because they exist. But when their abilities are kind of a plot point, but it doesn't really...
There's no cause from the story, and it has very little effect on the story.
Yeah, it's just kind of like it's there.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that's like, I don't understand. Like, if it was that Tim was also like a kind of weird kid that would doodle in his like notes, and his doodles were prophetic, and could foresee, like, if he wrote down the exact time over and over again, because a lot of people look at times like that as, oh, angel numbers. When other times it's like, no, that could be significant in one way or another, but you just don't know, because maybe it hasn't happened yet, or it happened to a past life or something. It was the so on the nose of it all that was not my favorite.
Especially because the main aspect of the psychicness seems to be that he can hear the pocket watch.
Yeah.
And the only thing that really adds up to is him wandering around with the pocket watch for like a half of each episode, until it's like, I have to give this to you now because the story says it's time to give it to you.
Yeah, it was the reason why he picked it up in the first place for me.
Yeah, it goes because his psychic powers were letting him like hear voices in it.
Because he goes to the doctor's office to get a book that he needs to pick up.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense to me. It's the fact that then he walks in, goes over to the mantle, and then picks up the watch seemingly for no reason.
Yeah.
And that could have been something that I missed.
Yeah, like I said, the only real thing they give you is that he can hear the doctor's voice inside the watch. What about the family of blood? They were kind of fun, especially you kept calling father of mine an oil baron.
He looked like an oil baron.
He's got with the big like curly mustache.
It was the big curly mustache and just his general rich man build.
Like the Monopoly man, but without a hat.
Yeah, and it was the white suit, and he is a farmer, but also, like, fucking how? That man was a plantation owner. Somehow got on a fucking boat and found his way into England. You can't tell me that he didn't.
All of this going on here is most unorthodox.
Yeah, there was just a quality about him where I went, he doesn't belong in England. He belongs in Savannah, Georgia.
Hey there, doctor. I'm here to take your life. I'm part of the family of blood. Welcome to Georgia.
At that point, it'd be like, well, I'm here representing the family of blood.
Well, I say, doctor, you see what we're talking about right now.
There we go. That's what he looked like. Jenny. She looked like somebody that I would be friends with.
She doesn't look exactly like some of your friends, but she gives off a similar vibe.
If you put their faces all together in a blender.
But then she gets to really really chew it up when she gets possessed by mother of mine. Mm-hmm. And she just looks evil.
It's the way. And then, of course, Tom Riddle, and then the scary little haunted girl. Anytime there was something like a cue for them to acknowledge the camera because of the watch opening, there was like a little sting, and they would all look over their shoulder all scary.
And they would sniff very heavily.
There was one...
Soup's on!
There was one shot of Tom Riddle in the ship, and the lighting is entirely green, except for one little red light, and he, like, looks over his shoulder, and all you can see is, like, a quarter of his face, but it was shot very well and looked very scary.
Yeah, they make this kind of fun decision, he especially, because all we ever see any of their, like, original forms is, like, this green smoke gas thing. So I think he sort of takes that and runs with the idea that because they don't have a real form of their own, they only kind of know how to pilot human bodies. And so his face is like permanently stuck in this like half smirk.
I equated it to like if you've ever seen videos of people pretending to be the reanimated corpses piloted by a dozen ants. Mm-hmm. Just very like approximate.
Vincent D'Onofrio in Men in Black 1 when he gets taken over by an alien and his face is like doing all kinds of weird stuff. It's that kind of same.
Because I also think that would be because the character before the possession is very smug and mm-hmm. does give that little like shitty and grin of like, let's all have a beer, but we won't share with the weird kid. But I think that could be then if the family of mine can only see like surface knowledge of this person, mm-hmm. then that could be like a default factory face setting. But it works because then it is the like son of mine has this permanent smirk because he does know something that you don't.
Yeah.
He's up to no good. Mm-hmm. Always, all the time. Mm-hmm. I also really liked the way he spoke to, like, people in power.
Headmaster, sir. Good evening, sir. Come to give me a caning, sir. Would you like that, sir?
Keep a civil tongue, boy.
Just, like, rattling off all the things that they've heard humans yell from the school.
Yeah. Cease and desist was my favorite.
Yeah. The school itself is a really fun setting, too, because it's especially the school in, like, 1913, so it's got a very particular, like, way it treats the boys that go there. Like we said earlier,
They're cadets.
Yeah, they're cadets, but they all, you know, they have to get, they get permission to beat one another.
Permission to commit violence.
Yeah, they're being taught specifically how to be members of the military. One thing that's kind of fucked up about it being in a school, though, is knowing that we're technically watching a school shooting. Yeah, I realized that partway through, and I went, oh, no.
Well,
because it feels very different from any sort of modern-day version, so I don't...
It's the fact that the children are armed that does tip the scales, because...
Yeah, where the school itself is also shooting back.
No, I'm not advocating for everybody should have a gun.
Yeah.
But...
Well, it's also because it's such a radically different setting from modern-day. It doesn't feel like it right away, so
Particularly because this is not simply a school. It is not where you go for 8 hours a day to learn. This is like a boarding school.
Yeah, it's like a military
academy.
That's
your home. Like, yeah. That's where you live for part of the year.
Yeah.
And so there is a part of me that, you know, if you're under attack, you're not only protecting your school, that's kind of your home.
Mm-hmm.
And you're serving God and country, so...
Yeah, but like I was saying, because it's so different, I don't think it's as triggering for us immediately, because it doesn't immediately register as what it is.
No, because we watched that and went, oh my God, it's Hogwarts.
Yeah, a little bit. We did say, oh, David Tennant's a teacher at Hogwarts again.
Oh, it took me a minute.
Because technically, he was Mad-Eye Moody. Hello, Father!
So sad that was all he got.
Yeah. But then we get to this ending where...
Real monkey's paw.
Yeah, where the doctor's like, oh, you all want to live... Where it started off with them saying, we realized that the doctor was running away as a kindness. And that's when you're going, oh.
Well, it's the fact that the doctor does successfully trick them by doing... nose ventriloquism.
Yeah, he tricked them into smelling humans when he was still a Time Lord.
Then going in and pretending to be a human, accidentally pressing all of these buttons.
I'm just going to try and lean up against, whoa! Or maybe I lean over here, whoa!
It had the same energy as like when I'm fucking around going, oh no, I made such a mess. Oh, I guess we got to order in because there's such a mess.
Oh no, Country Bear Hall has been crushed.
Oh no, I falled backwards into some butterscotch.
Did I do that?
It just felt very much like a whoopsie daisy. I'm just a silly old human. Yup, nothing here but us humans. That's a Steven Universe reference for you.
And he goes, and then he just tells them to run. And that's when the monologue starts of, yeah, the doctor was running and hiding, not out of fear of us, but to be kind to us because he will absolutely destroy us for eternity.
Yes. Because, so, just to recap,
yeah,
we had father of mine wrapped in chains.
That are unbreakable chains that were forged inside a dwarf star.
Very Greek.
Yes. Let mother of mine loose into an event horizon.
Event horizon, that's what I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, so basically she will be eternally, like, falling into a black hole. And then the sister was left inside every mirror.
Which... I feel like that sucks.
Yeah.
That is the least painful.
That is the least painful. But also, like, emotionally speaking, it's also, you can look at people forever, but they will only see you as an optical illusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's effectively like being a ghost.
Yeah, but at least you can go places. You're not being ripped to shreds and put back together again, or crushed under the weight of unbreakable chains.
Yeah, and then
or stuck to a pole.
And then,
as our good friend Tom Riddle,
yes, a son of mine, was suspended in time and left as a scarecrow to watch over the fields of England, which means that basically father of mine, son of mine, and daughter of mine will live until the earth scorches, which the ninth doctor watches.
Jeez Louise, brother.
Like, he doesn't even, like, the doctor knows that he's just now condemned himself, his, like, past self, to have watched these three people die and as the earth gets roasted.
Yike, Roonies.
Yeah. It's certainly something. But then he offers,
think about it too long.
He offers Nurse Redfern the chance to come with him. And she says no.
Yeah, because you're not. You're not him.
Yeah, because, you know,
you look like him.
Or...
is he still there?
Yeah, which... I mean, that part is definitely like, yeah, that's understandable. But I don't know if you caught on to the last thing she said to him that caused the doctor to be like, and I'm out. She asked, hey, so if you hadn't... If you as the doctor hadn't just picked this place at random, would those people that were all shot to death still be alive? And the doctor just blinks and walks away.
I did catch that.
And you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Because there is a part of it where it's like, yeah, the doctor didn't want to, like, hurt these people. His entire goal was just to try and hide for 3 months until they died out naturally. But in doing so, more people have died.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of that, like...
I think in total, the body count was something like...
it's at least 6.
I was going to say, it has to be. If you also include the people that the family possessed,
mm-hmm,
that's 4 right there.
Yeah, it's already 4, and then there's the number of people they shot.
And then there's the headmaster, and then at least that one other person at the dance.
Yeah, it's a couple people at the dance, there's a couple of other people in general, and so it's at least... I feel like it's got to be close to 10, if not more. So yeah,
round it up to 10, but that is still needlessly 10 people that have been sacrificed.
Yeah, and then on top of that, the doctor still condemned the family of blood. So in a sense, like, those 4 people, the family of blood themselves are all effectively dead.
Twice over.
Yeah, they're tortured for the rest of their existence. And then... the other 10 people are needlessly dead. So the doctor's plan to, like, escape and hide only made things worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that's probably part of why his punishments were so extreme, where it wasn't just like, I'm very upset right now. It's that I'm also mad that what I did caused this, but I can't punish myself. I can only punish you. And so your punishments are going to be so bad.
Well, because even still, his punishment to himself was becoming the doctor again.
Yeah.
Because all he wanted was to be John Smith and to be human and have a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah. It's
because the beginning of his life was, you know, you could even argue, like, the beginning was the prime of his life. It's when he meets his love and... you know, everything from then on was married, children,
grandchildren, you know, life stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something to be said of the doctor's punishment to himself was assuming the role of the doctor once again.
Yeah, it's very, it's a, I guess one of the things it sits with you because it's a very dark.
Well, especially because you had said it at the beginning of if given the opportunity to become the doctor, you would.
Yeah.
And, you know, on paper, it's like, wow, yeah, that'd be really wonderful. I've always thought if I could, I would love to go back in time, way far back in time, and take a Polaroid camera and take pictures of dinosaurs and, like, take audio recordings of what they sounded like. Just because if you look at, like, modern bird, like, penguins is a wonderful example because a lot of their musculature does not match the amount of, like, meat, fat, and cartilage on them.
Mm-hmm.
So they look very different than what scientists would assume that they looked like based off of skeletal remains. So I'm always curious what dinosaurs actually look and sound like. And moreover, what do dinosaurs taste like? That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I am a monster eater. Let me eat the bones of Dilophosaurus.
Well, let's see.
The bones of Dilophosaurus. There's a joke in there that I'm sure somebody will get, but only if they know that for a long time as a joke to myself, I called it Dildophosaurus. And I will let you sit with that and unpack it. Send me a message if you understand.
Well, let's see how you feel about wanting to snack on the monsters of next week's episode.
Oh, no.
Because next week...
I swear to God, if they're Slitheen, I'm going to fucking cry, scream, and throw up.
No, next week we watch arguably the most famous episode of Modern Who. We watch Blink.
Tune in next week for Blink.
Yeah, so tune in next week where we watch Blink on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Good night.
Well, you all know what comes next. Next week we get all wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey, and Cassie gets to meet the Weeping Angels. So if you're excited for that, be sure to subscribe to get notified when that goes up next week. And if you liked this episode, be sure to give us a like or 5 stars wherever you're listening right now. I will also post some pictures of Cassie's reaction to the Weeping Angels on social media, so be sure to follow us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, and Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. Keep an eye on your own FOB watch for next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Who's Days.